Moncrief on News Talk.
Here's an interesting statistic. The population of Dublin is roughly equal to the population of Glasnevin Cemetery, about 1.5 million. Some of the people interred there are famous, of course, but the vast majority are not. That doesn't mean, though, that many of them don't have fascinating life stories, something that prompted Warren Farrell to write So Once Was I. Warren, good afternoon.
Oh yeah, thanks very much for having me in.
How do you go about researching these things? Because I suppose they're the more, you know, they're the more obscure stories you're unearthing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, with a place like Glasnevin Cemetery, there's so many stories to tell. So a good place to start was with the records of Glasnevin Cemetery. They're all digitised for a start, so anyone can access the records. But if you go through the records, like in the early days, very basic stuff was recorded. Later on, though, from the 1870s, you'll have like first and last name, cause of death, address, location where someone died, and that can be a good starting point. Okay. And then from there, you're trying to like get birth, marriage, death records, census records, try and flesh out the story a bit.
Yeah.
So that's where it all begins, really.
Yeah, I suppose the cause of death is probably what prompts you to try and investigate further.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, like if you're in Glasnevin, because it is digitised, you can search people by surname. So you can do like how many Burns are buried there, how many Murphys. You can look up how many people died as a result of heart failure, as a result of different cancers.
Yeah.
But some of the more unusual causes of death do flag sometimes. So head crushed by an elephant might be one that would flag.
Yes. So the head crushed by an elephant,
yes.
And that was a poor unfortunate zookeeper.
Unfortunate. So, yeah.
But you had that one sentence. Then where do you go next to try and find out what the details were?
From there, I suppose I emailed Dublin Zoo to find out a bit about the man himself. So his name was James McNally. He was a very experienced zookeeper. And there's a lot of records in Trinity College. So that's actually my full-time job, working in the access department in Trinity. So I have a nice inn there. So the Zoological Society minutes have lots and lots of minute books in there. And if you start reading through and you get to the date, the 26th of June, 1903, that was the unfortunate fateful day for James. Went in to look after the elephant Zeta. Zeta's foot wasn't the best. It had an ingrown toenail. James went in for a closer inspection. Something startled poor old Zeta, and his head was crushed as a result. And then from there, you're using burial records, newspaper reports to try and piece it all together.
Yeah.
And like James's son would have been there on the day watching the whole incident unravel. It was about 50 seconds long, so it would have been quite quick. But obviously, you don't want to make light of these stories either.
No, absolutely not.
Very tragic, very awful circumstances to lose a husband, a loved one. His son John was given a job in the zoo. And then some other zookeepers, like there's other unusual causes of death in the zoo. There's a zookeeper called Thomas Flood. He was impaled by a stag deer. There's John Supple, who was, he died of heart failure after being bit by a python. So it's a bit of a death trap, to be honest. So.
Well, I suppose it's been there a long time.
Yeah.
Now, you do have a personal connection to this, in the sense of one of the stories, your great-great-great-grandmother was a murderer. Or manslaughterer.
Yeah, it depends on the way you look at it. But, yeah, I suppose my interest area is social history, or the oral history of how we story tell. As a tour guide in the cemetery, sometimes people will come up to you and say things to you and you're like, oh, I wonder if that is true. Or there's always a pinch of salt that has to be taken with a lot of these stories.
Yeah.
But my own grandmother, she's 92 this year. She regularly would have... The running joke in the family when you go in to see Granny will be, oh, lock up the scissors before you go to bed. And the story she would tell is that her great-grandmother, she had murdered her husband with a fish scissors. So they were fish dealers from the inner city of Dublin. I didn't really take too much notice of that story until I started working in Glasnevin. And I thought I might go searching through the newspaper archives. And in the Irish Times, sure enough, boy killed by his mother, 1896, that pops up. So I go looking. Her name was Mary Lacken. So all the bits and pieces started to piece together. The only difference was it wasn't the husband that was killed. It was her son that she killed. Basically, she had a very hard life. You're talking about the 1890s in inner city Dublin. She had 14 children. She was suffering from a lot of postnatal depression, I'd imagine. And she was in and out of prison. And one morning, her son Patrick said, look, will you cook me some eggs? He didn't like the way the eggs were cooked. So she kind of lost the head a bit at him and she kind of took the scissors up out of anger and flung them at him. In the end, it went through the back of his collarbone, out to the front of his chest, and he ran down Ball's Lane beside Green Street Courthouse. and a police constable saw him and he died as a result. And he was only 16 years old.
Oh, God.
And they're all buried in Glasdevin today. There was a court case. She was sentenced, as you said, as a result of manslaughter. Even the scissors was produced in the court to shocks and exclaims. And then she died down and out in the North Dublin Union workhouse. May 1901, her husband died a month later, also in the workhouse. They're both buried in unmarked graves today. And their son Patrick is on the other side of the cemetery in another unmarked plot. So from just that granny's little story in her house, you get this massive kind of story to tell. And that's really important social history, like especially in the times we're living in, like all these big massive events, whether it's world wars, epidemics, pandemics. A lot of the time people's individual stories, you know, they kind of get lost to statistics, the thousands that died. But the actual individual stories, that's kind of what interests me.
Yeah, anyway. Sure. Yeah. And you know when people say an unmarked grave, that means it's just a rectangle of earth, there's nothing
grass,
else.
Or a piece of gravel, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, just to give context, like Glasnevin, there's 1.5 million people buried in the cemetery. Out of those, there's about 200,000 monuments or headstones of varying size and vanity or whatever way you want to look at it. But the majority of Dubliners or people from around Ireland buried in Glasnevin, they're in unmarked plots, which is simply a bit of grass. You might look up on the record, Mary Lacken, go down to see the grave. Hopefully it's going to be a headstone, and it can be very disappointing or very deflating to get there and think, oh God, you know, no one probably been to this grave for 100 years, 150 years.
For the people that are maintaining Glasnevin, I assume there's some sort of number system where you say that's plot number or whatever.
So the Victorians were great for record keeping, so we have them to thank for first. But from the very first burial, a young boy called Michael Carey, 11 years old, died of consumption, so TB. Essentially, they began like a grid system. I always think about it like a game of battleships. So if you're up in the cemetery and you ever go for a pint of Guinness, maybe down at the Gravediggers or John Kavanagh's pub, the cemetery expands east out to west. So from east to west, you have rows that are all letters, and then the letters start to repeat themselves. And then the opposite direction, you have numbers, which will give you the location of the grave along that particular row.
Right. Okay.
So no matter if you have the biggest headstone, the smallest headstone, no marker whatsoever, it's actually really easy to pinpoint where their final resting place is.
Yeah.
Which makes it a really interesting place to explore.
Is Glasnevin expanding? I mean, does it have anywhere to
go? You looking for a grave?
Yeah, well, you know, everyone will be eventually,
So there's still graves. You can still buy a grave. So Monday through to Saturday, there'll still be burial services. There'll be cremation services. Still a place still full of life, for want of a better phrase, along with the visitor centre and people coming up to do tours and, you know, see their Michael Collinses and their Raymond De Valeras and Countess Markoviches. But alongside that, you have the business of burying the dead.
Yeah.
There's about 20, 30 years of burial space left. My own grandfather was buried just last year in what we call a gone-over grave. So that was a grave that was unpurchased. So a lot of the time, people couldn't afford to purchase a grave.
Yeah.
So they'd give them a bit of leeway and they'd give them the right of burial. So over 5 years, the family had a bit of grace to raise that money to buy the grave. 9 times out of 10, they wouldn't have the money at the end of the 5 years. So then the process repeats. And so you might have a Murphy, an O'Shea, a Farrell, all in that same grave, but no relation to each other. Now, today, my grandfather's case, there might be some space left at the top of that grave.
Yeah.
So for the reduced price, you can go in and make some new friends for a term, I suppose.
Okay.
So hopefully he's doing that,
Okay. I suppose then at the more exotic end of things, tell us about Mary O'Kelly de Galway, or Mary Cummins, as she was originally.
Yeah. Mary Cummins is an interesting one in that there's an RT radio documentary about her. She speaks herself in it. But only just as this book was coming to its conclusion, some of my colleagues said, have you put this woman into your book? And I said, no. Her story in a nutshell is she was born in 1904. Mary Cummins, her maiden name. Family of modest wealth. So she was able to go to Belgium, worked as a governess, a teacher essentially. And then the Second World War breaks out. So she joins the Belgian resistance. Only ever woman or Irish person, in fact, to join the Belgian resistance. And she's carrying dispatches around and do very dangerous stuff. She's picked up by the Gestapo. She's sent to various different concentration camps. So it's a very grim list, but you have Essen, Bergen-Belsen, and then eventually she's scheduled for extermination in Auschwitz. And fortuitously or unfortuitously, whatever way you want to look at it, she, on the way on the train derails. So unfortunate to be sent to Auschwitz, but fortunate that the train derails. Ends up back in Bergen-Belsen. The camp is liberated, and she survives. She was 4 stone at the time of liberation, in a very, very bad, dilapidated state. She left accounts of having to watch people drink water laced with glass as torture methods, cannibalism. She was sexually assaulted quite a lot in the camps. So she had a lot of trauma to live with. But she married a man in any way in 1946 after the end of the war. That's where the unusual surname comes from.
Yeah.
His name was Count Guy O'Kelly de Galway, apparently descended from the wild geese of the 17th century. Don't know how true or not true that is. But they get married. They have 13 happily years married together in Dublin, form a new life together. And then she drops him to Dublin Airport, 1964, and she never sees him again. Disappears without a trace. And to this day, there's a bit of controversy of who was the real Count Guy O'Kelly de Galway. Some speculation says he might have been an MI5 agent. He was undercover at the time, a sleeper agent, if you will. We don't really know, to be honest, but she survives World War II, Auschwitz, all of that. Then she loses the husband, never hears from him again. And she only dies in 1999. She was still walking around Howth in her 90s, and she was cremated in Glasnevin. All that tells you she was here once upon a time in the context of the cemetery is on the cremation wall, a tiny little inscription, Mary O'Kelly de Galway and her date of death. So yeah, those stories are really fascinating. Yeah,
She's a survivor. The name of that book is...
There's a film in that, I'd say.
There is indeed, yeah. So Once Was I is the name of the book. Warren Farrell is the author. Warren, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.